Hello, my name is Wendy Schaefer Miles, and my husband and I are collaborative artists and paint in oils and live here in beautiful Wisconsin.
Hi, I'm Kevin Miles, and my wife and I have been married 28 years, painting together on over 3,000 paintings so far, and we hope to do at least another 3,000 before we have to retire. Artists don't really retire, but that's our goal, is just to keep painting beautiful things and sharing them with people.
I found out about you offering classes in your home. That's a new thing that you've started doing. And while I was here painting with you the other day, I was learning snippets of your story. And it sounds like you collaborate on every painting in some capacity. So just tell a little bit about your process.
We started painting on the same canvases just by kind of the nature of how we paint together. We were out painting on location with our French easels, and I'm more painterly and work more quickly, and sort of, it's a spontaneous emotional thing for me, and, you know, I can't seem to get it on the canvas fast enough. And for my husband, who's more classically trained, he tends to analyze and think about light and color and shading more, so that he comes in and does more of the detail work. And you want to tell how we started painting together and collaborating?
Well, I originally came from Baltimore and went to Florida, is where I met Wendy, but you said she'd be banging on the door. But anyway, I lived in Baltimore, went to school at the Maryland Institute School of Art, and I used to do mural jobs. When the city had projects, I would bid on them, and I would hire all my artist friends to complete these murals that were 24 feet high by 120 foot wall murals. And we always worked together and collaborated, and we all had food, which was good. You know, it was rough when you're starting out, but those projects help, you know, pay for our food and rent. So I got used to working with other artists, and I would walk, I would walk in, and he'd have lost interest in a piece of art, and I would pick it up and look at it and go, man, it's really good, but it could be better, you know? And I would actually take like a watercolor on ragboard and varnish or shellac it and paint oils over it. But then I would go out and trade that for food, and I was the hero because I could get food for art. But I always had a habit of working on other artists' stuff and with other artists, and for me, it was always in the completion of the work where I got the tingles that Wendy gets in the beginning of the work. When she starts something, all the passion and excitement is there. For me, that's work, that's labor. And I never really, it's drudgery for me in the beginning. It's just like trying to get to that point where things crystallize and become a reality on the canvas. Then I get my jolly. So it's a perfect kind of match, you know.
And I think this is a really interesting thing, because we know that art is very personal and it's all in the eyes of the beholder and all of this. So did you ever go through any struggles with feeling like somebody else was tampering with your art, or how did you kind of work through some of these things that might come up for artists?
You know, I think it started out, we were just in love. We were painting together. We were working together all day. He actually hired me in an art supply warehouse, so we were working together all day, painting together in the evenings on weekends, and all we did was talk about art and where we wanted to go and paint. We both loved the outdoors. Me growing up on the dairy farm in Wisconsin, and Kevin spending most of his time outside and, you know, everywhere from, you know, woods and mountains in Alaska to, I mean, all over the world. He just loved being outdoors. Typical boy, I suppose. But for me, growing up on the farm, it was outdoors, and I always loved painting nature and landscapes, and, you know, Kevin did also, and that's kind of what we started doing, was painting outside in the landscape. And because we were together, I suppose, that really meshed our subject material, being we liked the same things in landscape, we liked color and light.
The painting was just an excuse to go out and be in nature. I mean, it was what we were doing to make money as well, but it was like, if you can make your love for nature and the outdoors your job, that's a good thing. That was our goal. And mm-hmm. At the time, we were doing abstracts, we were doing surrealism, we were doing, you know, 12 different styles. And when we were in Tampa, we said, we could have had a 12-person show and because we had such divergent styles and between the two of us. And when we decided, we came up here at the invitation of Wendy's dad. He said, I've got all these empty buildings, and her sister had moved to Colorado, and they were thinking about retiring before too long. So they were kind of lonely and wanted somebody on the farm. So that was a good opportunity, you know, for us to crystallize our goals and have space to work in. But that at that point, we said, okay, what is it we want to achieve? If we're going to be full-time professional artists, quit our jobs, what is it we want to do? What do we want to make out of this life, you know? It was basically wanted to travel around the world and paint the most beautiful places and share that with people and get paid for it, you know, to make a career out of it. And since we did love adventure and travel and being at the top of the world, and we decided that was going to be our theme, so to speak, that we were going to make that our job. And we sat down, we wrote out a business plan, we wrote out a mission statement, and with the help of a business person that we had no knowledge of these things, but we were approached by a guy that was from the university with extension system that was developing rural education, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, just humor me and fill out all this paperwork. And we're like, artist, you know, and paperwork don't go together. But
still don't.
Yeah. But we said, you know, we humored him, and we did. We wrote out, we want to travel around the world, see the most beautiful places, make a six-figure income, you know, share our work with a broad audience around the world. And literally within 5 years, we were in 40 countries around the world making the income we wanted to, published, you know, by the biggest publisher in the country. And
which was who?
Well, at that time it was Porto Publications out of San Francisco area, but they got us a really broad audience, and it was you know, it wasn't an accident. We worked really hard at it. We worked hard every day, even though we were having kids and everything too. We had our hands full, but we had grandma and grandpa to help. But we had very clear goals on how to achieve what we wanted to do, and we did it, you know, with a lot of help from people.
So your business plan also sounds like almost a vision statement, right?
Same thing. It's pretty much if a personal vision statement or vision board or whatever you want to call and business. It's not any different in business. It's like a business has to have a vision too. And we never thought of artists as businessmen or as a business. And, you know, it's like it was always the antithesis of business being an artist, right? But the reality is when you put things in writing, they become more concrete in the world, and things reorganize themselves, whether however you want to look at it, in physical, spiritual, scientific means, things reorganize to bring you what you write. It's like very crazy, but it's so amazingly true, you know. It's happened so many times in our lives that it's almost, you take it for granted somewhat, which it's not to be taken for granted because it's really magical, you know.
Well, and I do think, you know, this is one thing that, you know, you're doing something you love to do. You really don't go and start making art to make a business or to make money.
Art's the
it was like the last thing on your mind, and we both went to, you know, art colleges, and so that was not really the focus when you go to an art school for your education. And so when we had this person telling us to write up supposedly this business plan, which to us really is more of a statement or a visualization, you know, attached to steps and a plan with dollars equaling those steps, you know, how much does it cost and how much are you going to get, and just kind of clarifying some of those things, which was an interesting, you know, artists, that's something, one thing we just don't think about that much.
In art school, it's all about the history of art and the aesthetics of art and nothing about the reality of making a living. And that's, I'm not saying that's wrong. It's the way,
right.
That's the way it should be, because you need to open your mind, you know, to the beauty and the history of what you're doing, and that's very important. But the reality is all of a sudden you're thrown into this world and you have to exist as an artist, and they say only 1-2% of the people coming out of the art schools actually make a living in the arts. So that's pretty, that's rough, you know. The odds are against you, and you have to be a little wacky to think you can do it.
And as you were sharing your story, one thing that struck me is that you said you had, Wendy, you said you had an advisor that tried to say, maybe you shouldn't go this path. Maybe you should be an art teacher. And yes. Your response to that was, well, maybe that's what everybody should be told when they are thinking about going into art. So what was it that made you kind of go forward and do it anyways and take your own path in spite of the advice you were given?
Pretty much, I was a born artist. I had grown up with the freedom from my parents to follow whatever, both my sister and I were allowed to just follow whatever passion and whatever interest we wanted to follow, because they felt that was very important. And especially for my mom, who didn't probably have the, she didn't have the opportunities at that period in time, in the 40s. And so for her, it was very important to have both of us follow a passion or a dream or whatever came to us. And of course, that's what we both did. And then I know more than likely from my experience with other people telling me that I shouldn't, you know, be an artist, that you know, it was simply out of that fact, whereas you're probably not going to be able to make a living and you won't be, you know, able to survive. But I just knew there would had to be a way, and that there, you know, had to be possibilities out there. So I guess it was just that determination that made me want to just continue. And no matter what, I was just going to create art.
Yeah,
and
the bottom line is, you're miserable if you're not doing it. So you have right. to make a decision. If do you want to be, you know, challenged to do it monetarily, which is, you're up against the wall if you don't come from money to start out as an artist, but, you know, and happy at the same time, or do you want to be miserable doing something else? And all, you feel in your soul that you've sold out, you know, you do, you feel like you've sold your soul, because when you're a born artist, and I my first painting went on a nationwide tour, and I was the artist that was brought in by my third grade teacher when I was 11. And you know, you get picked out for your talents when you're young. And, you know, that helps a lot. But it's just something in you that you're obsessed with, that it makes you happy, you know. And you have to do it or you're not happy. So there aren't a lot of choices. But the reality of the world is, it's not easy, and you have to struggle, but the struggle is fun. It is. That's part of growing and living and learning, and that's, you know, I like that part of it. And it still is, after 30 years, you still struggle on some level to attain different goals and learn more about what you're doing. And every time you sit down to paint, you're learning still. That's the amazing thing.
Yeah.
Never
definitely.
Ends, you know.
I know some couples who say the best recipe for disaster in a relationship is to do business with your partner. And so for you, earlier, Kevin, you said that you liked any excuse to go out in nature and paint, but you also talked about that you met doing art. So I'm assuming that you built your relationship while painting.
Yes.
And I'm curious if you've ever encountered any hard moments, or I should say, when you've encountered a hard moment, I'm just going to guess that you, along the way, there's been one or two. How have you navigated through that? And how has your relationship reflected in your painting style?
Wow.
I know, it's a big question, right?
Easy answer for that. Okay. It's like, first, we ended up working together because of commerce to some degree. Like I said, I had a bad habit of working on other artists' work, and you know, I don't see anything unusual about that. I mean, musicians work together, writers often collaborate.
Exactly.
It's not an unusual thing for creative people to work together, but it is for visual artists. They're kind of held like poets. They have to be loners and feel their own vibes, whatever, you know. And to me, that seems kind of silly, but the, because you are people and you need people. That people thrive off the energy of other people, that, you know, and to isolate yourself is not healthy. But anyway, so the first thing is the kind of a mutual respect for each other's abilities and a knowledge of each other's weaknesses that you don't use against each other. You know, it's like, if you know
it said nicely. Okay.
You
know,
I like it.
Like, yeah, you know, if you can pick up the slack where your partner is weaker in marriage and in business, you know, in life, then you'll work well as a team. I mean, that's just, and the funny thing is, our moods go in opposite things most of the time. It's like, if one of us is kind of down and not feeling real inspired at the moment. The other one will be all pumped up and ready, and, you know, kind of, we kind of balance each other out well that way. You know, we're not both like going off the charts, crazy, exuberant at the same time, but we sort of have shifting moods that work well together. That's important, I think. You know, we've done 3,000 paintings together. And we're probably one of the only couples, or maybe two, three couples in the world. And there's a Russian couple and I think a couple from Arizona that work like we do. So it is really unusual. But we don't even question it. There's really no reason to. It just works for us and makes us happy. So why not, you know?
And what's your take on this?
You know, I think when we're painting together and when we are out, I mean, we don't really have much negative discussion about painting. Everything is pretty positive and focused. And when we're out looking for places to paint or hiking or sketching things out, it's pretty seamless for some reason. We really, that's the passion, I guess, and the glue that keeps us together. I think probably there's more stress and trauma over things with family or with, you know, even
same thing as everybody,
you know, monetary things, you know, business.
In-laws, you know.
That's all. But, you know, somehow they've never become anything huge or even they're just brief little.
Yeah, it's like the art.
The art over encompasses that.
All the annoyances of daily life. So it's like your therapy that you don't have to pay for. I've said that before. It's like you go paint in the studio and all the other stuff that seems inconsequential at that point just fades away, even though it's important and it is life. It's the art is the escape from that, you know. And a lot of our job is to go out and find these places, and we're standing out there with the sun shining down on us, and we're in the middle of a beautiful forest, and it's like you died and went to heaven, but you didn't really. You're in heaven and you're alive, you know. And that is the goal that you try to recreate, bring back to life for people on a canvas, that moment where you feel you're in paradise, you know. That's for us.
Or the moment when you feel like your life is in danger because you ended up being caught in a storm on top of a mountain peak and 50 lightning strikes are happening all around you.
That happened.
I won't.
You might as well share it. Go ahead.
And I was screaming for, you know, everything. And Kevin's very calm and he's laying on the mountain going.
I'm Mr. Zen. I'm like, you just have to like disappear. Like just release all fear and energy out of your body into the ground. Become one with the ground so you don't attract any negative energy. And meaning lightning, you know, because we're on top of a mountain and I've never heard so many lightning strikes. It was like a war zone, and the thunder was just rumbling. The earth was moving underneath it. We're laying in a beautiful field of wildflowers.
So thick, you know, so deep.
But at the same time, it's like the end of time apocalypse going on, and we're peeking out. We had a tarp, and we're peeking out from under it, you know, trying to figure whether we should make a break for it. But it was like, you know, it really tested your, you know, courage. And the
best part was is when there's a lightning strike like this, you're supposed to be out in the open and just stay low to the ground. You're supposed to separate yourselves so you don't stay together. And because then if one of you gets hit, the other one will probably be there. And I said, there's no way that I am going to go somewhere else and lay on the side of this mountain. So if we're going to both get hit, we're going to get hit together.
Yeah, we were basically curled up in a fetal position under this tarp with a hail pelting us, and we were singing gospel songs and, you know, saying prayers. Every prayer we ever knew from third grade on, you know, we were making lots of promises, you know, if we made it down the mountain. And actually, we fulfilled quite a few of those, so that's good.
Yeah.
But
you made it down the mountain. You're here today.
Where was this? This was up in Vail Pass on Shrine Ridge.
And you'll never forget this experience.
Well, see,
no, that was... It was something, you know.
I actually orchestrated the whole thing, and I kind of knew this was going to happen because, see, I'm an adrenaline junkie.
Orchestrate a storm.
Well, no, because I knew it was coming, and I knew we'd get caught in it. I had the tarp. I was prepared. I'm an outdoor kind of guy, so I always have gear ready for the worst. And I saw this big black cloud sneaking up behind us, so I kind of figured we were in for an exciting afternoon, you know. But it's like that's part of our job too, is that, you know, I remember stories like Constable Turner and these guys would go out in nature and tie themselves to the mast of a ship and then paint these really dramatic storm paintings. And that stuff was kind of a fantasy for me when I was a kid, so it probably still in the back of my mind. You don't intentionally, but I am an adrenaline junkie, see, and Wendy isn't.
No,
she's like total
not.
About security and yes. safety and all yes. that. And but she said to me, she's like, it was your birthday, and I said, what do you want? She says, I got everything I want. And I'm like, but what do you want? You know, what do you? She's like, well, I never get to go hiking because you always get to go with the kids, and she's busy doing other stuff. So we went on 5 epic hikes in 5 days. I just told her to pack a little bag, and I didn't tell her we were going to go for 5 days. And we went to 5 different mountains and waterfalls and everything. But it was pretty cool. But that was just
this one. Included? Was this lightning storm included
that
in the package of 5?
Yeah,
yes,
was part
yes
of
it was.
The birthday present of a lifetime.
And we did continue on after that. So
but
you survived.
Was, you know, it's like... That stuff gets your blood flowing, you know, and it makes you grateful to be alive every day for sure when you come. Actually, were 9 people that were killed in that same storm that were all grouped together. A group of construction workers got nailed. I don't think they were all killed. Like 7 of them got tossed, 2 of them got killed.
Yeah.
They said there were more lightning strikes that day than they had on recorded history. And we were at the tippy top of the mountain, you know. It was foolish. It really was. But
did you get a painting out of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Several.
Yeah.
Several.
Wendy painted a lot of storms when she was younger and single.
Yeah, I always liked storms for some reason.
Women always supported her storm paintings. They were very popular with women. They'd go nuts over them and they would buy them right away. And I was wondering if that was some tumultuous kind of representation of how they felt sometimes.
I think so.
Doesn't everybody?
I think so. You know it's an emotional thing, you know, where you really can relate to that storm and that and the what comes after it.
Were you drawn to paint storms because of particular events that were going on in your life at those times, or?
Not really. I mean, I think I always felt, I'm generally a very pretty happy and optimistic, but I tend to have ups and downs like everybody, but they're usually really extreme. Like I'll be crying and sad, and then I'll be extremely happy a couple minutes later. It's like this, you know, constant thing, whereas Kevin is more constant, even. I'm always going, aren't you happy? You know, or aren't you sad? And I don't see any difference.
Yeah, I'm dancing on that side.
But yeah, exactly. But
that's more of a guy thing too.
But it's, you know, for me, painting is all about emotion, and I can really pretty much bring that to the painting. Like a lot of times, Kevin will even say, when I'm really sad over things and events that have happened, then Kevin says, well, your painting seems very moody or dark. Try to brighten it up a little bit, you know, but I mean, it just happens, you know, it's a very much intuitive thing for me.
What your intention is.
And that's probably why I liked storms, because there's so much excitement and variety of
senses. Yeah, it's funny, we'll paint a play, like we actually did paint that storm into a painting that ended up in a client's home. And I remember that we had to make a commitment to the customer, the patron, to go back and repaint the sky in the painting, because the wife had gone through breast cancer and the stormy sky was too scary for her. She couldn't live with that because it was ominous and it reminded her of her life struggle. And I said, that's not a problem. We know what robin's egg blue skies look like. Mm-hmm. And you know, if that's having that kind of, and this was a surprise. She didn't even know about this painting. So, we are planning to go back and repaint that part of the painting for her. And it is like, you know, it's funny how art affects people in different ways. And you would think it's dramatic and it's exciting. One person's going to see it that way, and the other one's going to see it as an ominous end of time, you know? So it's like, it's interesting when you do something, you do it for your own particular reason, but you put it out there and then you see all the different emotions and interpretations that it gets. And that's quite interesting.
And you're able to get beyond the part that maybe some people would have some ego involved and say, no, that's the painting and that's how it is. You take it or leave it. Instead, it sounds like you can say, this is my art and you're my client and I'm going to meet you in the middle.
Think about it, though. I mean, these people actually, we lived in their place up in Colorado and they were kind enough to take us in and we hung the artwork for them. And the, you know, the art was giving her emotional trauma. And God forbid, that's, I want to force that on somebody, you know. And that's not our intention to leave people with those kind of feelings. So, and it's only a painting. It's not, you know, it's just paint on a canvas. It is not the end of the world. And we know what happy looks like and sunny skies looks like. It's not a, we've always been like that. We don't have that kind of attachment to the work itself. It's the experience of doing the work that really counts. And then working with people is awesome.
It's really interesting for you guys because a lot of people have this like inner desire to do something and they just don't because it's not practical enough, but you've actually, your profession is your life passion.
If you ask any individual, how many working artists do you know that actually make a living from just their work and not teaching or other incomes and stuff, it's pretty slim. It really is not easy, you know. Like I said, you have to be a little wacky to think it's possible. But that's a fine madness, you know, and it works if you... It, for me, like that question you just asked, it's about communication.
And the question I just asked was the most important lesson you've learned on your life journey as a person and as an artist. But go ahead, communication.
It's not just communicating with your artwork. Your artwork has to speak to people without words. It has to grab them and it has to speak to them. It has to speak volumes that they're willing to give up their hard-earned money to want to live with it. So that in itself, that's a communication that's totally nonverbal. But it's basically you've gotten excited about something in your life that you want to represent and share with other people, and you put it out there. It has to be bold and vivid and attract people like hummingbirds, otherwise you don't make a living. But that's the one form of communication for an artist that you have to be good at. But the other is loving people and wanting to work with people and knowing that everything in your life comes from another human being, that you can't have any success in your life without other people sharing their knowledge, their abilities, their money, everything with you. And if you communicate well verbally as well as with your work in an open, sharing, honest way, you get what you need, you know. And people are very, honestly, very helpful and very kind. And that being in the art business, we deal with, like if I was a lawyer, I would see the world completely differently. My dad was a military intelligence officer in Vietnam, an interrogator. He sees the world entirely different because of his experiences. But we positioned ourselves in the art world, which is sort of a fantasy. You know, I mean, it's like this beautiful, you're creating beauty and people are enthralled with it. And they open up because of that to you. And they're coming into your world of beauty and they embrace you and they are different people than they would be in the business world. So you create this world around you that's made out of love and in people embracing you because you're giving them beauty. And that's like, it's unreal. It really is. But I always tell my kids, I said, the quality of your communication is the quality of your life. It's simple as that. You don't have to have a lot of money. You don't have to have, you know, a lot of things. But if you know that other people are the most valuable asset on the planet to you, that you can have whatever you want if you can just ask for it, you know, the right way and not selfishly, but willing to give at the same time, you know, what your abilities are and share them. You can pretty much, it's the opportunities are endless, you know.
You are the son of a military person. You described yourself as a military brat. So I'm just curious. A lot of people would picture such people with parents in the military to maybe be pushed in a different direction. So how did your dad respond when you told him you wanted to be an artist?
Yeah, that's really quite interesting because I had friends that were sons of four-star generals overseas and they would fight, throw plates at the dinner table, screaming, yelling because one didn't want to go to West Point, you know. And all my friends went into the Naval, Air Force, West Point. Everybody I grew up with all went into military academies, you know. And the funny thing is my parents both grew up and were rebels in a sense that they didn't want to be in the environment they were in when they were young, and they went off on their own to make their own way. And for my dad, the military allowed him to get an education, travel all over the world, raise a family, see things he never would have seen as a farm kid in Iowa, you know. So he appreciated that, but he also understood that I had an ability, you know, that was unique. And for some reason, he saw that was important to share, you know. And I think because they had such issues in their family life early and broke away for freedom, they were rebels, that they wanted me to have the freedom to make my own decisions and were supportive of that. That was fortunate because I knew, like I said, every one of my friends had just the opposite of that. They all were fought, you know, for trying to be a creative person, so.
And before I get to the most important lesson for you, Wendy, one thing that you said earlier is that your mom grew up in the 40s and didn't have these kind of opportunities, and she wanted you to have a different life. So just really briefly describe how your mom's life is different than yours.
Well, my mom, you know, went to small town high school and was married shortly after high school. She worked a while, and my father had gone to short course for agriculture in Madison, and then they married at some point after that, and she became a housewife. I mean, that was pretty much the norm. Very few people, women, went to college to get educated. If they did, it was for some nursing or teaching, things like that. But she wanted to be a housewife and a farm wife. And she did not grow up in a farm. So for her, it was a new experience. But she really had wanted to go to school for interior design, believe it or not. But so she was a very creative soul and had a lot of... she could paint and draw. I have volumes of things that she did in high school and watercolor and things like that. I always said my mom was the original Martha Stewart before that became a huge thing. And she was a perfectionist also. So not only would she refinish all our furniture, but she would refinish it 2-3 times to get just the right shade, color, and texture of the varnish that she, you know, the depth and the color that she wanted. So that was important to her, and her father was a Finnish carpenter and also a perfectionist. And so I grew up with that, people always making things, being creative, coming up with solutions independently of any other help or means.
So she was a crafty person or some level of an artist at heart, perhaps?
Definitely, definitely. Although she never called herself an artist or even a creative person, this was just work to her. She was going to do and create and make a beautiful home, a beautiful garden. She canned, she did. Everything was this amazing life around my mom. Was really, and I just was like the helper. I just was there doing whatever she told me to do.
Nice. And so for you, the big question of the most important lesson that you've learned on your life journey as a woman and as an artist, what would that be for you?
For me, it remains the same as when I was a child. You have to follow your heart and follow your passion and just intuitively let it take you somewhere. And then remember to spend a lot of time alone, because then those things will come to you more clearly.
Say a little bit more about that part.
People aren't alone a lot these days. Now, I don't mean like go lock yourself in a room, but I mean spend time. Well, you know, spend time with nature and take walks and be alone without a cell phone and without a social media following you around, but just sort of like being alone with nature, which I grew up doing, really makes you intuitive and sort of able to follow a string that the universe gives you. And I don't know why, but for some reason, you know, that happens. And so I think that's the life lesson, you know. I did it naturally because that's how I grew up. But it's not easy because, like you said, all these things in life get thrown at you and stuff happens. You know, I always say life happens. And then that kind of, you're not sure, it kind of breaks you away from what you think your direction is. But really it's not. It might just be a little pebble or a little stone thrown in your path. And it might still be the correct direction. but you might have to recorrect here and there and just keep going. But it's basically, everybody asks me, I can't find anything that I love to do. But I think they're searching too hard, because sometimes it's really simple and right there, but people have to learn that.
And if we're always glued to our devices, or we're always forcing ourselves,
channeling come through, and the channeling is there. Turn off the TV, turn off the radio, and just try it for 1 week in the morning. Don't turn anything on, and don't even like set a time if you have to before work that you have to check in, so to speak. But just have time when you don't turn on the world, so to speak, and just kind of live in it. Because that's how I grew up as a child. It was. Pretty simple, you know. There wasn't, you know, we just worked. And in working, you're spending time thinking.
And I've actually talked to some people who talk about really having this desire to just please everybody around them. And I've never found that to be very effective. And I would think having some time alone probably helps you get focused inward a little bit.
I always tell them, we have two girls, and I tell them, I say, you know, 98% of the world isn't going to care
what you do.
About what you do, period. And I say half of the 2% that's left are probably, you know, going to be a little bit interested in. And then that 1% that supports you and what you love and what you do, is you feed those people constantly. You give them everything you've got, and they give back to you. But you only need that 1% to approve of you to prosper. You don't have to please the whole world. You just please the people that support you in your passion. And that's your audience for an artist or a musician or something. But, you know, it's the same in real life. It's like everybody's caught up in their daily life and their own little dramas and traumas. And then all of a sudden your little drama gets to be a part of the world. And they'll, you know, run around buzzing about that. But it really doesn't make any difference to you or your life. You know, honestly, I mean, there's the core group of people, your family and your friends. They're always going to be there to support you, you know. Unfortunately for us, we have clients that are art collectors that are everywhere and that are supportive of what we do. But it's like, it's really, you don't have to please the whole world. Just a small little part of it to get what you need in life, you know.
Which is really going to come from really doing what it is that makes you shine and get up in the morning, right?
Mm-hmm, pretty much.
And I like what you said about life. Life is what life happens, kind of thing, or life is what happens while we're making other plans. And I do have to throw this in. You shared, and I can cut it out if you feel uncomfortable, but you shared that you have dyslexia and a poor sense of direction. And actually, it was you made a wrong turn on a bridge.
Yes.
And that's how you met your husband?
Yes.
Do you mind sharing that story?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd gotten out of art school and moved to Florida with some college roommates that had family there. And I got a house and a dog and a puppy, and I was looking for a job, anything to do with art. I mean, I was out of art school, and what do I do for a job? I had no clue. And so, you know, I mean, I'd always did artwork since I was a kid and done festivals and things, but now I had a lot more bills and expenses than I did then. So I thought I'll find something art related and find my own art community down here that I can work with. You know, there's got to be some people. So I started circling things in a newspaper, and I packed up my puppy, and we were going to go out and go to the beach. And I ended up on the causeway. I was in Tampa, and I ended up on the causeway going to St. Petersburg, which is this long 3 mile long bridge across the water. And I made a wrong turn, and I thought, oh no, do I have enough gas? Oh no, you know, how far is this going to go? And I thought, okay, well, there was something about art in the newspaper in St. Pete, but I hadn't thought about going there because it was in St. Pete. I was in Tampa. So I looked at the newspaper, and it said Art Supply Warehouse, and it was the street, and it was the exit ramp, and then the street. And then I pulled up, and there was a parking spot right in front of the Southern Art Supply Warehouse. So I pulled in with my big gold station wagon and walked out and was walking into the art supply store. And Kevin came out walking toward me, and he goes, "Hi, are you here for the job?" And I thought, well, not really, because it's too far. So I said, no, I just came to look around, you know, and he proceeded to give me a tour and found out, you know, I was an artist and talked and showed me all about the art supply warehouse. And the next morning, and then I left, you know, and the next morning he calls me, he says, you've got the job. And I said, I don't want the job. It's too far away. It's all the way in St. Pete, you know. And he convinced me and said, he said, well, there's no way that you're going to find a job anywhere else with no experience. So I'll teach you everything there is to know. And then you can get a job somewhere in Tampa. And I thought, well, that's probably true. And some very good advice. So I said yes, and ended up the route of going off to St. Pete every day. But the whole thing was, is I was lost, and I'm always going the wrong direction. I never really know exactly where I am, except I'm in a beautiful garden somewhere painting. I don't remember if I was in what botanical gardens, or, you know, it's just like all in the moment sort of for me. So in a way, I get pulled in directions almost, even though it's by accident, or it's, I still believe it's the universe pulling a string and dragging me along to these different places. Just almost, it seems like an accident, let's put it that way, but it really turns into something much better. So, and that's how I met Kevin, and we started painting together, going out to places. And of course, I had completely given up on guys at this point in my life. I said, I need to do this alone, because everything is, it's just not working out. I need to find either somebody that's completely interested in painting and working together on this, or, you know, and I could never find anybody with the same passion and interest and direction as me. So I'd kind of given up. Like, you know, they say, if the minute you give up something, it just comes right in your face. Well, that's exactly what happened. I mean, and so I was very, like, now I'm not interested in this guy at all. I was very offish, so to speak. And of course, what Kevin did is he said, we're going to go out and painting dates together. And I said, well, they're not dates. He says, no, we're going to go out painting together. I said, yes, that's better. And so he came over and to pick me up and my dog, and we're going to go painting to Fort DeSoto. And I looked out the window and he was walking up and he had his hand behind his back. And I thought, oh no, he brought me like flowers, or he brought me something totally like a guy gift, like, you know, he's going to give me something to, you know, something, you know. And I thought, this is not a date, you know. And he came, I opened the door, I was all hands on my hips and, you know, trying to be like tough or whatever. And he pulled out a big handful of sable paintbrushes.
Awesome.
And said, you know, this is for our painting weekend. He said, I brought you these to paint with. And I was like, my heart melted. And I thought, oh no, you know, he got me. This is so wonderful. And I've always told any young boys that I ever see, I always tell them, remember, the way to a girl's heart is find out what she likes. Don't just bring her some random gift. Always find out what is her interest and what is her ambition and what excites her. And then you can probably find something. And it's just true with anything. You know, you've got to know something about somebody to really, you know, attract or get their interest. But that's how we started. And it was the beginning of a really, really wonderful relationship that was almost like seamless. It was like we had known each other before. We had interests in common. Was like amazing, and that's why we were able to paint together.
Nice. And now so, and then you went on to have how many children together?
Two girls
who are now growing.
Yes. And when I was little, I knew I would have two girls and that I would have a studio on the farm.
That was your vision when you were a child?
When I was somewhere grade school, third, fourth grade, somewhere right there on there.
And how did you know that?
I don't know if I really knew it, but I was like, that was a fantasy. That was the visioning that I did as a child. Does that make sense?
It does. And I hope people take something powerful away from this, because I think a lot of people think, well, what's the point? I mean, it's not going to happen. But I think if you flip your way of thinking,
well, and
that it does.
I can't really say I mean, all of that, I followed that vision, like when I went to art school, when I went to thing, I was still trying to find, where am I going to fit in all of this? And I couldn't see my life on the farm or my life having children or a family even fitting into all that, because people tell you it won't. I mean, really, they tell you there's no way you can have a family. There's no way you can, you know. And so for a while, it's really hard to find yourself back through all that. And you sort of, you do it many times in life. You lose your vision. You lose your intuition. You get confused by what's coming at you in the universe and things that are happening. Like, you know, all the, you know, the life stuff that happens, you know.
And the unsolicited advice coming from people who... Oh. Are really projecting their own reality onto you a bit, right? Saying you can't make it, right? You have to kind of see through that.
Oh, I have a little tidbit. Remember we talked about her teachers giving her a hard time about going into art. Maybe she should teach or something more practical. And she was devastated at that point. But a few years, I don't know how many years later, but quite a few years later, we were participating. When we first moved up here, we were painting together with this art dealer in Chicago who was buying everything we did sight unseen. He saw one painting we had done together and he said, anything along those lines, I will buy it outright, which is really unusual in the art business. It's usually consignment, which means you give them the artwork. If they sell it, they pay you when they get around to it. But this guy was committed to the work and he believed in it and was very supportive of it. But the we were doing this art regional art show just up the road in Eau Claire, and it just so happened that one or two of your teachers that mm-hmm. had given you this advice about not being an artist were also participating in the show. And I found it very disturbing, you know, because it hurt Wendy so much, and I'm very protective of her. So I was like talking to one of the teachers and he's like looking at the painting we had done together on the wall. And he said, how did you get the do to glisten on the leaves like that? And I said, well, I studied the old masters and Rembrandt and Flemish realism. And I said, you know, we've just been doing this a long time. Wendy started when she was 9, I started when I was 11. And I said, you know, we've done this all our lives. And he's like, you guys really make a living at this? And I said, oh yeah, we make 6 figures. And yeah, we've been doing this at that point, I don't know, wow, like 10 years or something. And he just stood there with his mouth hanging open, and I felt really good. It was like, you know, he was teaching and never was a professional artist and didn't think it was possible. So what he was projecting on Wendy was his own limitations of his world, you know. And that's another thing I tell my kids too, is it's like everything people tell you is colored by their own experiences. So take it with a grain of salt, you know, and understand that it's through their colored lenses, you know, because yours may not be that color. You may see the world entirely different. So you have to be strong enough to believe in your own vision and your own whatever it is your heart's telling you, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Right. And try not to internalize those vocalized limitations, because really a lot of the unsolicited advice is just that. And the last question is very abstract, which I'm hoping you'll be able to grasp onto as artists, but the title of my next book is going to be The Rhythm of Change. Okay. So I want you to think about, what does that phrase mean to you and how does it apply to your life and all the various hats that you wear? Mm-hmm. Although for me, both of you are just artists in your approach to everything, it seems.
I think the rhythm of change is perfect when you're talking about an artist, because what happens as an artist, you start out as a child and everything is free and open and very easy. And as all children, you draw and paint with just abandon. And that's how I started. You just like, oh, I'm going to paint, you know, a circle. And, you know, that turns into the sun or a bug or, you know, just whatever's in front of you, or the color of an apple, or it just... And it's sort of, then it turns into something else and you're just kind of keep going with whatever's flowing out of you at the moment. Or it might just be that you're painting all of the color red, you know, and it's just easy and fun. And, you know, it just goes and goes and goes. And then as you grow and you go to school, people recognize your talent. They say, oh, that's wonderful painting and drawing. But, you know, that's, you can't do that every day, and you can't do it now. You have to do it in an hour. You can't do it, You know, you got to stay on the paper. You know, you can't take it with you now. You have to leave this, you know, and we have this much time to do it. And, you know, it gets to be very organized and very structured with lots of rules. And I had a terrible time in grade school. Talk about change. I was like, I don't understand this. And I wanted to quit. And I hated school. I did not want to be in school. I wanted to be in the woods drawing or herding cows or, you know, feeding chickens. I didn't want to be in school. It was too structured and I just didn't understand it. So I cried and cried and cried every day for a long time till my mom one day told me, she said, you know, you probably have about 10 more years of school. And she began to explain to me how long years were and this and that. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be in school forever. And so at that point I said, okay, I have to get with this and really work at it because this is something I'm not going to get out of. And so that was a change in my mindset. So then in school you go, okay, we have art classes. So you become structured and organized out of necessity. And that leads to, okay, then you're going to be an artist. Well, now you have to go to art school or you have to go to, you know, somewhere where they're doing art. And everybody would tell you, you have to go on the East Coast or you have to go to the West Coast. So I thought, okay, there's another change, you know. Well, I really didn't want to. I wanted to just stay home and paint and draw, but that was what you were supposed to do. So I went and looked at the Chicago Art Institute, loved their figurative program. I thought, oh, they're doing some really traditional things. Teachers, instructors were great. And I thought that would be wonderful. But the city, I couldn't tolerate all that input, constant noise and smells and just everything was too much for me. So, you know, I started out smaller and went to university and then did 2 years there and then transferred from there. And well, and that, as we talked earlier, was when they said, well, because I couldn't really speak, I was very shy and couldn't speak about my work. They said, well, you should maybe take a different direction and not concentrate on your art major. And of course, I was crushed. So there again, another change. You have to like figure out what to do again, you know. And so after some soul searching, I thought, well, I'm an artist. I've always been one. And I can't let people tell me that I'm not one. That's ridiculous. And so then I transferred and went to another art school where I changed my focus from being, this is really funny. When I was in school, I learned to be, you have to be very structured. You have to be very organized. You have to follow the program. You have to be president of the Art Students Association. You have to, you know, get straight A's and everything. Every project has to be done, you know, in a timely manner. And I did all that, although that is not, it kind of kills the creativity part of it. There's not really, you know, room to really become something, you know, to, well, never mind. Anyway, so I graduated from, you know, the art school. And then again, this empty void. Okay, I've got my art degree. Rhythm of change. Now what do I do with it? Well, I simply retreated and went back. I was so exhausted from all of this. And I did want to go on to get my master's degree. But of course, there was no money left after all that. So, and I really didn't really have my heart set on that anyway. And I was kind of exhausted from all this constant, you know, I'm really exhausted. And so I just stayed on the farm and, you know, worked with my folks on the farm and painted. And then some friends of mine were moving to Florida, and I thought, well, first I went out to Colorado with my sister where she was, but my sister's a very strong, independent individual, and I felt she would overshadow me. I'd be too close, and that would be too shadowing. So then, you know, I went to Florida with some friends, and that's where I met Kevin, and then that story and part of my life started. And then, I mean, I guess our age is perfect for this rhythm of change thing because we've gone through so many life stages. We've gone through our parents and living and dealing with that. And both my parents passed away in 2009. You know, a lot of sadness and depression over that because we lived with them on the farm for all those years raising my two daughters. And then my two daughters are on to college and doing their own thing. And, you know, it's a constant ebb and flow of things. But the one constant through all of this ebb and flow is the art and our painting and our joint passion for creating art.
That's the one thing that nobody can take away from you. It's like no matter what changes in your life and what devastates you or takes you to the ground or brings you to your knees, you can always pick up a pencil and a piece of white paper and still have that, you know. And that's pretty amazing. That unless you're disabled or, you know, not physically able to, but artists like Renoir, Matisse had, you know, arthritis so bad they would lay in their bed and work on their backs, or would they actually tape brushes to their hands because they were claw-like, you know, from rheumatoid arthritis. And, you know, that's the one thing that you always have as a creative person is that place in your mind you can go to and discover that world, and nobody can steal that. Even if you were in prison and didn't have outside input from the world, you still have that inside of your mind, that place, you know, that belongs to you. And that's, you know, that's something nobody can take away from you, despite all
cry.
changes in the world.
It made me
you know?
Cry.
But I mean, the thing I find about change is it's inevitable. Obviously, that's the cliche, but it's also, you know, it's frightening. It's terrifying sometimes, but it's also stimulating and one of the most exciting things that can happen to you, because it challenges you, and it happens constantly. There's always changes, and we create a lot of changes because we're always trying to be better and discover new things. And, you know, it's scary. Change is frightening when you're used to a certain pattern in your life, you know, but when you push yourself and create drastic changes, you discover things about yourself and the world around you and the people around you that you had no inkling about before. So that's it's a frightening thing, but it's also a revelation at the same time, you know. But it is inevitable. If you get comfortable in your life and you think everything's perfect, watch out, because the next thing you know, something's going to come up that's just going to totally turn your world in circles. So, but that's life, you know. But like, the fortunate thing is, despite all the pains and sorrows and challenges you go through, we always have that core of beauty, that repository of beauty around us to fill us up again. You know, that's pretty cool.
So I've taken about an hour of your time. Is there any kind of final closing words or something you'd like to add that I didn't ask you, or anything like that for either of you?
No, well, that was a very wonderful interview. Thank you.
Anything for you?
I don't know. I always wonder in 5 years where your life is going to be. You know, to me, that's always the, you know, we just are empty nesters now, which is a huge change for us. Like, we were always surrounded by lots of people and our kids and grandma and grandpa on the farm. And all of a sudden, we're on a great big country estate, so to speak, farm here with just ourselves. So we're having to adjust to that. It's different, you know.
So we're kinda having nice. Art classes.
yeah, that's kind of what
we're looking for artists and people to come and enjoy painting.
We started
painting.
Going that last fall and winter because we have the option to go on cruises around the world for free because of our artwork is for sale on the cruise. And, you know, honestly, we traveled so much over the years that we just thought it'd be nice to stay home and, you know, do some domestic stuff more. So we chose to do that. But we started opening the studio in the fall and winter last year just because we're a little bit isolated on a farm here and we needed input from people. And in a way, it was a way to bring people in and socialize and share your passion and love for what you did. And so we've enjoyed that, you know. It's something that we haven't done much of, but we're always demonstrating at art festivals and art shows. And we've been on every major network in every major town because of that. We always are drawing attention because we actually create artwork on
wherever
the spot,
we
wherever we are. And everybody's always sticking a camera in your face going, wow, we've never seen anybody. In 30 years I've been coming to the show, I've never seen anybody create art. And I'm like, well, that's weird, isn't it? You know, it should be the first thing you see when you go to art show. But
and so I think our next big change and everything will be inviting people in to paint and to draw. And not only that, but have a creative place where people can escape.
Yeah, we want to surround
and
ourselves with
find that quiet time.
Also share the beauty of this area and the solitude that we have here. I have what I call my outdoor office. The farm goes way down the valley, and there's rolling hills, and a lot of the land belongs to Holly's sister, but it's just being farmed, and it's still, you know, beautiful and pristine. And I have a place I go to in the course of a day if I'm stressed out and I have to call clients, or I'm under pressure to do something I don't care to do. I go out to this group of pines I call the Black Forest, and I have a little kind of nook in the woods there where I go sit, and I pull out my cell phone and I start chatting to people and just saying, oh yeah, I'm out here in the woods overlooking the ponds. We created some wetlands there, so we have wood ducks and geese and egrets and herons flying in, and it's very cool. But and the deer going down there, and otters and stuff, beavers. So I'm sitting on the hill overlooking this, and that gives me an amazing energy and power and confidence to do things that I do not like to do in business, you know. So that's, we have that here, and we want to be able to share that with people. And also, but and surround ourselves with creative people that have new ideas and energy, and that's important, you know. I think that's the next phase of our life.
And on your website, there's a motto that says, live to paint and paint to live. Is that right?
Correct. You and got that, it. Yeah.
That sums it
yep,
up.
Yep. I said, we live to paint and paint to live. That's pretty much sums it up. You know, we paint every day, and we want to share it with people and need the support of people to enjoy the work. So
thank you both so much. I really appreciate it.